KPI.org. This is Am I On?
I Must Be On.
This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. We are in Pledge Drive, and it's our 1 week Pledge Drive. And this is Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this are not necessarily those of KFAI, but I think tonight they are. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks to many people for assisting me. Thank you, Jackson. And you can turn it up a little more if you want. And then also thanks to Elmar and Charlene Dahl will be coming in soon with helping me with Zoom with pledging. But you can pledge going to kfai.org. Do we have the phones available too, Jackson?
Yes.
375-9030. 612-375-9030. And tonight we were going to hear way back, a little bit back, on self-driving cars. So we are going to listen to that. And then we're going to break for another pledge. But hopefully you'll enjoy listening to this past thing of self-driving cars. Meanwhile, go to 612-375-9030 and or kfai.org and pledge. Thank you. Mr. Paul Brubaker. Paul is the president of the Alliance of Transportation Innovation, and we'll be speaking about self-driving vehicles. Good evening, Paul.
Hey, Sam. How are you? And Charlene, thanks for doing the research on this. Couldn't do it without you.
Thank you.
That's exactly it. People don't realize how much. Thanks so much for joining me, and I appreciate you coming on. Let's start out by talking about what is Alliance for Transportation and Innovation? What is that?
Yeah, we're a not-for-profit, what the IRS likes to call a social welfare organization. We're focused, truly.
Why?
I mean, it's a funky distinction, to be sure. But and the reason why I guess we're classified as a social welfare organization because we're focused on accelerating the deployment of any innovation that will dramatically improve the safe and efficient movement of people and goods. So we're really, you know, kind of at the intersection, if you will, no pun intended, of transportation and technology.
Huh. And so I'm curious, like, give me some history of you. How did you get involved with something like this?
This goes back probably like close to three decades. I've been in and out of government my entire adult life. I worked in local government, and then I worked in the general accounting office doing cost, schedule, and performance audits of federal programs. And I got really interested in transportation there, and then I spent some time on Capitol Hill doing policy around technology, and that landed a lot in the transportation space, particularly around aviation and the modernization of the air traffic control system, which ultimately led to some positions in various agencies. And I wound up in the Bush administration being the administrator for research and innovative technology. Which, you know, I was kind of front and center in that whole convergence of transportation and technology and was responsible for innovation policy. And that was at the time where DARPA had funded what was called the Urban Challenge, which was really sort of the birth of autonomous vehicles as we think about them today. It was a competition to see who could navigate an urban environment without a driver. And so the whole thing really kind of got started in the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is part of the Defense Department, and really kind of the same folks that gave birth to the Internet, which used to be called ARPA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Right.
But in any event, so kind of had a background in this stuff for a while, and that was sort of the birth of autonomous vehicles as we think about them today. And the pace of technology development's just been amazing in the last decade, and we are where we are today because of it.
And the competition is still on.
Oh, totally.
Can you give people, you know, I think people think a lot about exactly what is a self-driving vehicle? So if someone were to ask you that, what would be the definition you'd give besides the obvious?
I would give it a highly sophisticated sensor platform, sensor and computing platform. And what it does, it sees around its chassis, if you will, 360 degrees, and mm-hmm. you can gain a level of situational awareness that allows you to detect oncoming traffic or other traffic on the road, and as well as pedestrians or even other obstacles in the street, and it leverages artificial intelligence and machine learning to basically make machine decisions, steering, adjustments, speed, make those decisions autonomously without human intervention mm-hmm. that will optimize the flow of traffic and protect the occupants, which is the objective.
So not very long ago, I kind of always heard this idea about what exactly would an autonomous vehicle be. Like, would it have a steering wheel? Would it not have a steering wheel? And is there any consensus on this?
Yeah. So the Society of Automotive Engineers has a 5-level degree of autonomy, 0 to 5, and 0 is sort of level 1 or sort of what you have today, and then you have things like adaptive cruise control, which represents more of the level 2, and really kind of a Tesla is a good example. What they call a self-driving Tesla is a good example of a level 2. It's an advanced collision avoidance, if you will. It detects other vehicles in the area. It detects mm-hmm. lane striping, but it's not a truly autonomous vehicle. It's not like a level 3 is one where you can actually allow the car to drive itself for an extended period of time. And Audi is actually, an interesting full disclosure too, Audi is a member of our organization, but Audi released a level 3 self-driving or autonomous vehicle, if you will, a level 3 autonomous vehicle, has varying levels of autonomy, in Barcelona earlier this year, and it's going to come commercial in the United States probably, late 2018, early 2019. And that is that's a level 3, and that's really, I think Audi's kind of taking the right approach on this, because they're going to deploy those vehicles, but they're only going to be operable in level 3 autonomous mode at relatively low speed, like less than 35 miles an hour on divided highways, because they're using an overabundance of caution just to make sure that there aren't any incidents with the vehicle. And that's, in our mind, that's a pretty smart thing to do, but it's ideal for congested environments and crowded highways. And then you've got other low speed vehicles like a Navya Arma or two French companies who are leaders in the space, EasyMile, which is another one, or a vehicle that's made in the United States by a company called Local Motors, which has these micro factories, and they actually build these Ollies, OLLI is the name of the vehicle, using a 3D printer. And those are level 4. They have no steering wheel, no driver. They're programmed to operate. Some are capable of operating, origin to destination, much in the way you think about an Uber application,
right,
where you basically, tell the vehicle to come pick me up at X spot, take me to Y spot, and it will get you there, but albeit slowly. Maximum speed on these are roughly 25 miles an hour, and it's just it's not exactly speed racer, but again, it's a level 4 autonomous vehicle. And what level 4 means is simply that it does not operate in all weather conditions, and so in cases of heavy fog or mm-hmm. extreme weather conditions where most humans don't do a very good job of driving,
right,
they those can operate. And the interesting thing is, I will just give you a prime example. We did an AV road trip this past winter where we took a autonomous vehicle that's produced by the French company EasyMile mm-hmm. Across the country, And we took it to a number of locations, and it has an accessible ramp where, you know, it's not what you would call fully ADA compliant, but it certainly is accessible. Where you can you know, get a wheelchair on board, and or get a, you know, motorized scooter on board, which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
Can we describe the difference in the terminology self-driving versus autonomous vehicle?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to think about this is that an autonomous vehicle has varying levels of autonomy. In other words, it can make decisions on its own, and it ranges, like I said, like those SAE levels, those are levels of autonomy. A self-driving car is one that has the capability of truly driving itself. It's what everybody, I think, in their mind sort of thinks of, hey, hands off this, you know, not only hands off the steering wheel, but there's really no need for a steering wheel. And you can, you know, it's full automation all the time, and it just drives itself from point A to point B.
So that would be your level five?
That would be your level five, yes.
Gotcha. And there seems to be, there's a number of players that are in the field. You talked about all these players. I don't know. I know about Google and General Motors and Tesla, but there's other players. It seems like many more than we even hear about. Is there, it seems like really the race really truly is on, because whoever gets that fleet successfully working and accepted, you know, people are going to flock. So is there somebody who's ahead currently? And if so, how are they doing it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. There are a lot of players on the scene, ranging from, you know, startup companies. And by the way, as we are speaking, there are probably new startups coming on the scene, like you know, Aurora Innovation and Aro and Coast Autonomous, who are startups in this space, who are building you know, kits or even vehicles that would have certain degrees of autonomy. You've got companies like Robotics Research, who are building bolt-on kits for tactical vehicles for the military that allows a certain degree of high or full automation of you know, tactical vehicles for the military. Then you've got the traditional players. You've got, you know, the GMs and the Fords of the world, who are playing in this, and Volvo and you know, just a lot of it's a very crowded, dynamic space right now, with a lot of innovation. And then you've got some non-obvious players who are really in the IT world, like Baidu, it was a Chinese company. You've got Apple, who is experimenting. Of course, everybody's familiar with the Google car, which is now branded as Waymo, that is out there. And then, like, certain companies like Cruise Automation had been a startup, and then they got acquired by GM, and they are arguably one of the leaders in the space right now because of the advancements that they've made, just in terms of the advancement of their compute power, their ability to, you know, reliably navigate city streets. And they're out in complex environments and complex urban environments, testing their vehicles, looking for what they call edge cases, which are unpredictable experiences. Like, a lot of the one thing you probably need to be familiar with is that when it comes to, you know, more of the traditional type driving tasks, the dynamic driving tasks that everybody sort of thinks about, there's a lot of artificial intelligence that needs to go into that, and a lot of recognition of the environment. So you're seeing things like LIDAR, which stands for light detection and ranging, and radar and sonar and camera systems that are all scanning the environment. And that's a ton of data, and it all has to be processed through chipsets. And chipsets are made by companies like NVIDIA and Intel and Qualcomm, who are at the heart of the computing capability that is enabling self-driving. So there's a lot of complexity in this. And then there's also some things where these systems really kind of need to be taught what to recognize. Like, they need to recognize cyclists and pedestrians and deer. And even there's a famous case with Newtonomy, which is a company that was that's based in Boston, who just got bought by Delphi Automotive, because Delphi's in the game too. Delphi, Continental, all the tier one suppliers, all the so-called tier one suppliers in the auto industry are in this game too. Delphi just bought Nutonomy, and Nutonomy had like this amazing case where, you know, they're in Boston and they're testing by the seaport,
right?
And they would run into flocks of seagulls around trash, and the computer wasn't sure whether that was a snowbank or a rock or some kind of obstacle, but they knew it was something. And, you know, like a human would recognize those as seagulls and just sort of creep up on them until they dissipated.
Right.
But not the vehicle. The vehicle would just stop. So there's still a lot of development that needs to be done. Now, admittedly, you know, they worked hard and kind of got around that. But these are the edge cases that are arising before this becomes, you know, completely ubiquitous in the way that people think about it, where you've got a number of these, you know, level five fully automated vehicles out on the road. And there are these interim steps that we're going to take in the meantime, where we're going to be like, the first adoption is probably going to be these low speed shuttles. And it might be tractor trailers operating with, you know, with either native developed, by native developed, I mean, the companies themselves are developing the autonomous technology, or the technology may be developed by a third party that is a bolt-on system like Uber has, which used to be Auto out on the West Coast.
So there's a lot of people excited about this, including me. mm-hmm. Who's not excited about it?
Truthfully, there's a lot of fear in the public's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, because, as I like to say, you know, Stanley Kubrick did us no favors in 2001 Space Odyssey when HAL did not open the pod doors.
Of course.
Right? So there's fear of the machine, right? And
right.
There's this whole, like, view of this dystopian future where the machine takes over. And I got to tell you, the public's genuinely concerned. I mean, Pew Research, AAA,
right.
There have been a ton of studies out there that describe the public's concern or lack of trust in the underlying automation.
Right.
And it's not entirely unfounded. And it's one of the reasons why we went out and did this AV road trip. And the reason why I say it's not unfounded is because their experience with, you know, commercial technology has not been the greatest. I mean, everybody's had their iPhone crash or
their
smartphone crash or had problems with Angry Birds. But I will tell you that the level of rigor and discipline that goes into the software development, testing, and even the modeling and simulation around this underlying technology pales in comparison. I mean, it is so much more intense than the kind of stuff that goes into, like, deploying Angry Birds, for example, right? So these levels have a whole different level of rigor and discipline, and we just have to do a lot to assuage public concern. And I know, like, the National Safety Council and some others have programs underway where they're trying to assuage public concern. It's one of the reasons why we took these level four shuttles out on this national AV tour, was so that people could experience them, political leaders could experience them firsthand, citizens could experience them firsthand, people in the disability community could experience mm-hmm. them firsthand, and really kind of kick the tires and help assuage public concern with the underlying technology. And I got to tell you, the thing that I found really, really awesome about that whole experience was that they said, most people who experienced it said, like, this is just unremarkable. It's like a boring ride. We're just going around this parking lot. We did all these tests on closed tracks. They're going around a parking lot or this closed mm-hmm. track and saying, look, this just isn't that exciting. I mean, it's kind of boring, frankly. And so these underlying systems are pretty good, and you're going to see, I think, these level four shuttles being deployed in a lot of different places sooner rather than later to do things like first mile, last mile, you know, pick up where they integrate with the public transit system, perhaps, or they're in, you know, small communities, retirement communities, where they're making routes to, you know, the places of convenience, stores, entertainment districts, and so forth.
with me, and we are waiting for pledges. We love to hear from you. By the way, everybody, I'm not lying about this. Charlene will tell you, today is my birthday. Isn't it, Charlene?
It is, and you're 29.
I'm 29, forever. And also thanks to Elmar. Elmar graciously came in to help me engineer. And we always love to hear from you. So if you can give us a shout by calling 612-375-9030 or go to kfai.org and give us a pledge. We're going to continue hearing some more of the self-driving cars, and we will be back in a little bit.
If you look at the statistics, you talk about, you know, the public sphere, and that's true. If I could scare myself on things, but there's hundreds of people killed on the highways and roads every day. Every day.
Yeah.
And if you
look... 100 people every day.
Maybe even more. But for sure, you probably have those statistics. But for sure, you're going to have accidents with these cars. There's no way to get out of not ever having one, to learn from them. And so what I wonder is, though, it seems like we set these standards so high. And if you look at human error, we're so much, you know, there's so much lower that we make so many mistakes. So what's going to be acceptable for the car, you know, as far as error rate? That's kind of what I wonder.
Yeah, so we're holding, I believe we hold AVs to a much higher standard than we hold the status quo.
Right.
Status quo almost gets a buy, and people forget that, you know, we do, and the number is 100 people a day.
Okay.
You know, 36,000 people die on the highways every year. Ugh. And what's worse about this is millions more are injured or maimed, and some with get permanently disabled through these crashes. And we don't call them accidents. We call them crashes because, as NHTSA points out, 94% of all vehicle crashes are directly related to human error. So you know, this goes to your point, exactly to your point, that we're holding autonomous vehicles to a significantly higher standard than we seem to be holding, our own skills and abilities when it comes to getting behind the wheel. And we do have this over-exaggerated sense of our own control, those of us who do drive. And it's not borne out by the numbers. I would much rather get into a vehicle that had modern sensor technology and artificial intelligence and the computing power to make these decisions far better than I can. Because, look, let's face it. I mean, the computers and the technology, they don't get tired. They don't drink and drive. They don't get drowsy. They don't
they don't text.
It's just significantly
safer. Kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Or any of the other antisocial behaviors.
That's what does the law, if anything, say? Is it working on anything like about insurance? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's hard. I'm not a lawyer, so I
auto insurance
this comment by saying that, but there are a lot of people who, and I've heard a lot of lawyers on stage basically suggest that there's a tricky spot for the liability. But in the instance where the vehicle is taken over, where the vehicle controls are taken over by the human's responsible for it.
The human's
the one who has the liability. And the extent that the autonomous systems are being engaged, then it's the vehicle manufacturer.
I was wondering if that puts a lot of pressure on them to be as accurate as possible because they don't want to pay for more.
Right on. That is why I think so much of this. And by the way, we've got this like era of transparency and visibility into things that are happening now. And, you know, in this era of social media and the ability to detect and communicate really rapidly, it's really interesting to see the level of attention that things get when there are issues that arise. And I think of the Takata airbag issue, where I think, 13 people died on as a result of the Takata defective airbags. Mm. And again, we lose 100 people every day on the highways. And I almost think, I think it's very tragic that we lost people as a result of the defective Takata airbag issue. But the reality is we lose so many more people every single day that get you know, hurt, and then people who wind up getting, you know, permanently injured through these crashes. I think there should be like this sense of urgency about accelerating the deployment, which is one of the reasons why we started this organization, was to really kind of make that social public interest business case around accelerating the deployment of AVs for a whole host of reasons that, you know, safety, obviously, you know, accessibility, certainly, and just a whole bunch of benefits that to us are just so, you know, just so obvious. You get rid of crash-related congestion on the roads. And how many times have you been in a vehicle where you're sitting behind a fender bender, right? And then you think about the ability to be more productive in your vehicle,
right,
while it's moving. And then, you know, you could, if you think about also the expense of car ownership, when you're basically buying a vehicle, and in some households, it's, you know, transportation is the second highest household expense before healthcare.
Yes.
You know, right behind the mortgage. And if you think about the fact that we pay so much money for, you know, the cars, the payments, the insurance, the gas, and it sits idle 92% of the time, it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
So are people thinking, or are these cars tending to be electric or gas? And also, do you think that it will be people will actually buy, or will these be rented situations?
Yeah, so we think the real future of mobility, and that's how we like to phrase it, is it's going to be electric, autonomous, and shared. And we think the electrification of the motor vehicles is a trend that has critical mass that just simply isn't going to be stopped for any reason. Now, admittedly, there will be this transition era, and there will be people who are always going to like, you know, the petrol engine. But the reality of the situation is you see this inflection point taking place where you've got companies like Volvo saying that they're not going to produce any more internal combustion engine vehicles, and they're not going to offer them for sale. And you just saw GM make a big pivot on this. You saw Ford Motor make a pivot on this. And a lot of that, I think, is being driven in some cases by the Chinese market, you know, where China is basically saying, look, we're not going to allow any internal combustion engines on our roads, or we're not going to allow any of them to be produced in our country. And it just sends a signal to the market that the future of any transportation is going to be electrified. Now, there's a whole infrastructure issue that's going to need to be dealt with. Like, we've got to deploy the infrastructure. It takes up a lot of power, and we're going to have to figure out how to do
the distance,
you know, more power
issue
generation
too.
Because energy is energy.
Right. And there's a whole distance, you know. You can only go so far.
Range anxiety, yeah.
It's a whole new language, too.
but hey, you got to remember too that, you know, we had range anxiety in the early days of the car. I mean, you know, you could get oats anywhere for your horse, the horse could eat grass and keep moving.
That's
true. You know, in the early days of the internal combustion engine, the petrol stations were few and far between.
Ah, good. That's a good concept there to hold on to. So you made an interesting comment, and I think it's been talked about out there that cabs will be probably, along with trucks, that there'll be a whole cab situation where the cab is just sent for you and there'll be no driver. How does this affect, I mean, how close is this?
Well, I mean, in some cases, if you think about the low-speed shuttles, that capability exists today. They're just not cleared to operate on the roadways. And frankly, there's not a large number of those vehicles being manufactured across the globe today. That situation is going to fundamentally change. I mean, for example, Easy Mile has a capability where you could summon the vehicle, and it will come to where you are. But those, again, are sort of operated in controlled environments, campuses, industrial parks, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that, and as the other vehicles get more sophisticated, and I don't know if you've seen the demo of the Ford self-driving vehicle, the Taurus, delivering the Domino's pizza, but that kind of stuff's already happening. Now, it's not moving people yet, but it's just a matter of time.
And how do they deal with, like, security issues or hacking? Because they do have a link to the internet.
Yeah, so the great question, and that's sort of the conundrum of the era, and that's the conundrum of all the vertical systems that we're attaching to the internet, whether it's healthcare systems or health devices or, you know, solar panels or whatever it may be. I mean, as soon as you connect them up to the critical infrastructure, they become vulnerable. And there are a lot of great minds that are out there working on the issue of cybersecurity, particularly in the vehicle space. And the Auto Alliance has got, they started something, and now a lot of the other players, global automakers and others, and even the industry itself is funding something they call the Auto ISAC, mm-hmm. Which is a part of the Department of Homeland Security's Critical Infrastructure Protection Organization. And there are several verticals. Like, there's an ISAC. ISAC stands for Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
Okay.
And this is the automotive ISAC. And there's one for the banking community. There's one for retail. And they're all part of the DHS focus. And their focus is how do you detect and respond and in some cases even prevent hacking from taking place. So there are a lot of great minds that are at work coming up with strategies to secure our infrastructure and secure the I call them the ones and zeros, the data that are moving between the vehicles, even within the vehicle, and the data in transit, which is getting connected over the internet and typically wirelessly, and they even data at rest. I mean, how do you protect that? And that's something that that a lot of folks are very cognizant of, and it's very analogous to the lock in your house, right? I mean,
right.
And the detection that you want, and as we all know, as we've watched the evolution of safes, if you will, we've seen how they become more sophisticated as threats have evolved, and the same thing's going on here with the internet and protecting the internet and ensuring protection of our critical infrastructure, including motor vehicles.
We need to take just a short station break to let everyone know you're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, 106.7 FM St. Paul, online at kfai.org. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. This is Disability and Progress. Charlene Dahl is my research assistant. We are speaking with Paul Brubaker. Paul is the president of the Alliance for Transportation Innovation. Sorry, I had to. That's a mouthful.
I know, it's a mouthful. We call ourselves ATI 21.
And we are here at KFAI 90.3 FM and KFAI.org. And we are looking for your support. This is Pledge Drive, and this is 1 week in the summer that we're doing it. We're looking for your help at 612-375-9030 and KFAI.org. And Charlene?
Yes?
I am looking at these herb grinders. There's herb grinders that are here. And they are cool. They actually have really nicely built construction, and they can grind anything. Emphasis on anything. Anyway, you just twist them. And if you donate, if you pledge $120, we will send you one of those. Just have to say that's what you want to do. But any amount is great, actually. But that I'm just letting you know that at that $120 mark, the herb grinder is yours. Yes, you too could have one. But really, we like to say that we appreciate every amount. So 612-375-9030 and
KFAI.org.
We are listening to the self-driving cars version that we did of a program a handful of years back, and that is my goal in the
fall to send my research team, Charlene, back to get some more self-driving car information because...
The Alliance for Transportation Innovations.
That's right. So that's really important. I think that, you know, now that we're out of the hopeful woods of diseases, that's going to be our one of the things I hope to bring to you. Meanwhile, you can pledge to help keep this on the air, 612-375-9030, or...
KFAI.org.
We're going to listen to as much more of it as we can, and we will be back to catch you at the end. So speaking of, you know, people working together, actually, Washington has not really been on the ball when it comes to making legislation and things like that about this. And I know handfuls of states have started making their own. So can you speak to this about how they're working with Washington and what Washington is doing and how the states differ or what will happen here?
Yeah, so let me take a little bit of issue with that, because I think in this era of partisan divide and what can be politely described as unprecedented hostility in the political realm. Mm-hmm. This is one area where the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats have come together, is on autonomous vehicle policy. And just let me give you a real quick update of what's happening, in Washington in this area. So the House passed a piece of legislation, I want to say back in August, that it was their version of the AV bill, and what they're trying to do is clear the enable the U.S. Department of Transportation to have a path toward approving vehicles for testing, and that's something they call the Self Drive Act. And then the Senate has not passed the legislation yet, but they voted it out of committee. And by the way, the both committees that were responsible for getting the legislation out of the House and the Senate committee passed it unanimously. So chances are this is going to go to the Senate floor. It's going to get passed, and there will be a conference committee named. And then they will negotiate the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill. But the gist of what's happening in both the House and the Senate is they're signaling to the U.S. Department of Transportation that, hey, we support you granting exemptions to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard so that the design features that are mandated in that standard, things like steering wheels, brake pedals, all the things that presuppose a driver, and I think there are like something like 286 individual references in Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards to a driver, you can gain exemptions to that. So they're clearing the path. The one thing that was a big issue was exactly what you were saying, is all the states moving out, enacting their own legislation around autonomous vehicles. We had this patchwork of state laws, 23 that had passed, and there were more on the docket that were mandating certain design features within within autonomous vehicles, which both the House and the Senate legislation essentially say that there's a level of federal preemption so that the states could go ahead and still regulate the licensing, the registration of the vehicles, the inspections. But when it came to manufacturing design features, that was the exclusive purview of the feds. And that's since been – that's where we are right now. Now, neither the House nor the Senate bill have become law yet, but I fully expect that those will pass – the Senate bill will pass the Senate. They'll go to conference. They'll come up with a compromise bill. And by the way, there's not a big difference between the two pieces of legislation. So I think they'll be able to quickly reconcile their differences and then vote on it and get it on the president's desk, who I would expect would sign it. And we belong to an organization called the Coalition for Future Mobility. We were a founding member with a number of other organizations, including, you know, the Auto Alliance and Global Automakers, but more important, Lyft and, you know, ITS America and folks. But more importantly, the disability community is represented in the Coalition for Future Mobility. You've got the American Council for the Blind. You've got the National Federation of the Blind. You've got you've got the American Network of Community Options and Resources. just a number of related organizations, including 60 Plus, which is a seniors organization. So, you know, there are folks who are looking at the social benefits of this pretty heavily, and certainly the accessibility issue and the independence issues related with full automation that promise to give people more personal freedom, more economic freedom, and we're very excited about that.
You know, every article you read, somewhere the writer puts in, but there's going to be a huge job loss, but they don't realize, blah, 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 that you know, with these autonomous vehicles or self-driving vehicles, people don't need to drive them. So how is that being looked at?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I've really got to hand it to Senators Collins and Reed. Senator Reed's from Rhode Island. Senator Collins is from Maine, who asked the general or the Government Accountability Office to undertake a study on job loss and what the economic implications of increased autonomy will be, because there's a lot of fear out there, and it's not. I don't think the impact on the labor market will probably not be unlike the impact that the horseless carriage had, or the Ford Model T had on society. I think certain jobs will be disrupted, while others will continue to go on. Meanwhile, other jobs are simply going to change. Like for example, I do not see moving drivers, you know, tractor trailer operators out of the driving task. Mm. I see their work changing, because if you're sitting on a trailer that has, you know, 3 or 5 million or whatever the number is, millions of dollars worth of goods in it, you're not going to just turn that over to automation and let anybody, you know, sort of mess with this rolling platform.
Right.
I think you're still going to have people who will attend it. In some ways it could be safer, because you're going to see, you know, hours of service becomes less of an issue. The sleep apnea issue becomes less of an issue. And heck, you can even have people with certain physical disabilities be able to become an attendant in that sort of an environment. And then you've got other issues. Like, for example, you're talking to the father of a 17-year-old, you know, son on the autism spectrum. He's never going to drive a car, but he can operate an app. But with his level of, you know, where he is on the spectrum, he would not get into a vehicle that showed up by itself. If there wasn't an attendant available, I don't see him getting into it. And likewise, when you're talking about like senior citizens who are challenged, you know, from a mobility perspective, who summon an autonomous vehicle, there should probably be an attendant there, particularly if they're going to the grocery store, if they need help, you know, just sort of getting settled in the vehicle. There's probably going to be I don't see a role for an attendant completely going away. I just don't. I think the nature of the job will change. So I think a lot of the fear is just fear of the unknown. I think we tend to fear what we don't understand or what we can't clearly envision. And I think a lot of organizations are trying to paint the picture, ourselves included, of what the autonomous future will look like. And I think it's pretty rosy. I think the fact that, and this is a DOT figure, the fact that you've got, I think the number that the secretary put out was 2 million people with physical disabilities who lack convenient, accessible, affordable options for transportation are kind of shut out of the employment market. And I know people, you know, who are economically disadvantaged, who live in areas that are underserved by public transit, who have a 2-hour commute to, you know, a workspace,
right,
or a workplace that's 15 miles away.
Right.
We can do better, is my only point. And I think a lot of the fears and trepidation about what the future might look like are unfounded, but we don't know yet until we get there.
So I think there are, you know, we talk about rented vehicles or shared vehicles. I think there are going to be people who want to own their own vehicles. I mean, and I come at this as a perspective of, you know, with people with disabilities who've had to share for so long and have had that 2-hour wait that you talk about. I think that I would want my own vehicle. So how does that play into the driver's license? And is that even attainable to think about having your own vehicle?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, that the Senate bill actually speaks to that, where they talk about the fact that, you know, if you're in a highly automated or have a vehicle with full automation, that, you know, you can't deny a driver's license to somebody with a physical disability. And I thought that was pretty innovative. So I see where you're coming from on this. And I think, you know, you may be right. I mean, only the future is going to tell. But I think, frankly, it's going to be an issue of economics. And will people want to, I mean, these cars are not going to be cheap, obviously. These vehicles are not going to be cheap. And can we wind up, you know, like, for example, is there a, I think there are just business models out there that we haven't conceived of yet that are only limited by our imagination. And if you think about like a Zipcar where you can summon it to you and it will come to you, that would be fine. But there will be people that are going to want to personalize their vehicles, and it's going to be a function of I think just the economics. I think if folks want to bear the brunt and pay for it, then, you know, yeah, there's certainly, I don't see anything that's going to stop people from wanting to do that. But I think the economics are going to be so, and the convenience will be so compelling that most of the rides will be shared.
Don't you think it'll be something like supply and demand, though? I mean, I guess.
Totally. I like I say, it's the economics that I think will drive this.
I guess I see kind of the general public as pretty selfish, you know, and all you have to do is look at, and Minnesota, all you have to do is look at our highways. We have a lot of people who own their own cars. And yes, we do have some mass transit. Or look at L.A. People love to drive in L.A. Everyone has their own car. Transit's horrible in L.A.
But if I could send my car home after I get to work and my husband needs to go somewhere, you only need one car instead of two.
Yeah, I mean, I would challenge the thinking a little bit, though, because I you know, if you really think about how utterly convenient it can be and the cost effectiveness of it, I think people might change their thinking. And I think also this is generational. We did a global survey on what they call mobility as a service, mm-hmm. and it's basically transportation on demand, using whatever mode makes the most sense at any given time. And the Finns, believe it or not, have done a lot of pioneering work in this space. Mm. The acceptance of that is completely generational. If you look at the data suggests that millennials and people coming up are totally fine, the digital natives, if you will, in most areas. Now, there is a rural-urban issue, a little tweak in the numbers relative to, you know, whether they're in an urban area or a rural area, but the data certainly suggests that that we're breaking this down along generational lines. And people in my era, I mean, we love to drive cars. That represented, you know, freedom and,
yep,
you know, America, right?
Yep.
So
control freaks.
Yeah. But here's what I'll tell people that tell me, look, I love to drive. I you know, people still like to ride horses, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we let them do that, but we let them do it in areas that are designated for it. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that there will probably be gobs of roads and courses for people who really want to drive the old-fashioned, you know, internal combustion engine vehicles, or who want to race electric vehicles or whatever they want to do and get behind the wheel and, you know, take their life into their own hands. It's their prerogative.
I just wonder about, you know, the whole idea of when you have a cab come for you, and if it's just gotten done dropping people off from a party, how do you know somebody didn't make a total mess out of the cab? And when it shows up, you're like, ew.
We've got that issue now with Uber and Lyft and you know, the ride-sharing companies. And by the way, you've got also got the option there if you want to pool or you want to ride by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think we're kind of, there's just some real interesting innovation and some use models. You know, if you want to pool, you pay less. If you want to ride by yourself, you're going to pay more. And I just think that's the kind of those are the kind of economic decisions that people are frankly going to have the options. And I think more options are better. So to your point, like if you're absolutely committed to owning a motor, a vehicle, and I call them motor vehicles, even if they're electric because they've got electric motors in them. Mm. If you're committed to owning a motor vehicle, you know, you're committed to owning a motor vehicle and you're just going to have to bear the brunt of it. I think about the economics of it, and I think about like Singapore where they levy 100% tax on the vehicle. You know, you still have people who are buying them and you still have people who want to drive them, even though the economics make no sense. So, and I think you're going to wind up with, you know, varying levels of luxury in these things too. And you may subscribe to or use a service that has varying levels of luxury in it, mm-hmm, based on the economics.
Well, I'm okay with self-driving. I just don't know if I want to share. That was such a great show. That was self-driving cars. And that was a really fun show to do, Charlene.
Yes, it was. And there's more to come. We will be doing another show pretty soon.
Yes. And it was really educational, I think. You know, there's so much that has happened, I think, through the COVID time. There, I said it. I said it, Elmar, COVID. and everything that they were still not, it's not like they didn't come to a complete standstill, you know, so things were still going on and they still are now, certainly. And I look forward to hearing the updates when we get to bring them to you sometime this fall. Meanwhile, we'd like you to bring us some pledges. You can go to KFAI.org, a safe, secure website, and pledge till your heart's content and support Disability and Progress with Charlene and I. And all these programs that we bring you, we really enjoy bringing them. I've really had a lot of fun, even though we were not live in the studio. We were live, but not in the studio. It was fun to still be able to do all this, and we wouldn't be able to do all that and be able to do it from home like we do if we didn't have the equipment and the ability to do that with a station like this. And we have that because of you. So KFAI.org, right?
Yeah, KFAI.org.
And I think too, Charlene, you've kind of enjoyed being able to stay home and do the show from there.
Well, yeah, it's a little easier because the self-driving cars aren't efficient. So
they're not
mobility
here yet.
Kind of sucks,
they're not
so.
Here yet. So anyway, one last bit. Please go to KFAI.org. Give what you can afford. And if you make it up to the $120, certainly ask for that herb grinder because it looks cool. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. And thank you, Charlene, for coming on. And we will be back next week. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. If you want to be a part of my email list, you may email us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Thanks so much for listening. My name is Sam. Elmar helped me engineer. Charlene Dahl is my research team. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis. KFAI.org is where you can pledge. And I guess that's what I've got for you. We were listening to the version of self-driving cars that we did about 2017. Fresh Fruit is up next. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.
KFAI.org.